Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Luann Crane here with my co-host, Ryan Dobson. And Ryan and Doctor, today we will be continuing a conversation we started last time that really I can only describe as fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, Ryan and Luann, we were joined by one of the brightest minds in the country to discuss a topic on the hearts and minds of so many people, and it deals with the moral and spiritual decline in this country and what we have to do to get this nation back on the right path. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm speaking of our guest, Rabbi Daniel Lappin, who is known worldwide as America's Rabbi. He's a noted scholar who studied the Torah, physics, economics, and mathematics in Johannesburg, London, and Jerusalem. His first book, America's Real War, was a national bestseller, and he has written articles which have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, a National Review, the Washington Times, and many other publications. Rabbi Lappin lives with his wife, Susan, in Washington, and together they homeschooled their seven grown children.
Well, our listeners might notice the rabbi's great accent. He actually immigrated to the United States in 1973 from South Africa and describes the day he became a naturalized U.S. citizen as the proudest day of his life.
Well, his wisdom and intellect are a gift to this country, and I'm so thankful to this man for his friendship as well as the way he's called America to return to its Judeo-Christian foundation.
And really, Doctor, that call was the topic of our first half of the discussion. If anyone missed it, I would encourage you to listen in or even request a CD online at drjamesdobson.org.
This is one of the best broadcasts of the year, I believe.
Oh, it is. It is such a fascinating discussion. And we're going to open it, Luann, with you talking to the rabbi about the link between a civilization's approval of sexual sin and its eventual economic, moral, and political downfall.
Rabbi, it's ironic to me that the secular humanists, those who really chase after materialism, want this sexual depravity, and yet you've pointed out very clearly that there is this causal link between sexual decline and economics. So really, they are really working against themselves. They want this economy and this materialism, but on the other hand, they want their sexual depravity.
Okay, so yes, Luann, this is a very important point, and I'm so pleased you raised it, because I wouldn't want our audience to come away with anything of a mistaken impression. You're absolutely right. If it is so clear that there is a causal link, which there is, between sexual depravity and economic decline, why on earth are people so foolish as to proceed with this in some reckless, pell-mell slide down the slippery slope to the bottom?
And defend it to the teeth.
To defend it all the way. And one of the main answers, in my view, is that one of the great gifts that the Judeo-Christian biblical faith gives us is the ability to take a longer-term time view. And what I mean by that is, in the long term, I'm going to have to pay up, but today I can enjoy it. And this is one of the reasons that debt has damaged the lives of so many Americans. Like, didn't you know that you're going to have to pay the bill at some point? Yeah, but that's tomorrow. And when you strip out religion, the result is almost anything can happen. And, you know, you even look at what happened in Europe in the 1930s, Neville Chamberlain and his crowd. You didn't have to be a rocket scientist to know that the Western democracies were going to have to stop Adolf Hitler. After all, the man was helpful enough to all write it down all in a book, in Mein Kampf, long before, where he said exactly what he was going to do. Mm-hmm. And yet the view was, things are great, the music is playing, let the band play on, and let our successors deal with the growing crisis in Europe. But for now, We're not going to go to war. We're not going to do anything. So this is a general pattern. And so, yes, I can establish that sexual decline and demoralization results in economic depravity, but it doesn't happen overnight. Mm. And people say, well, I can get away with it. Of course, one of the tragedies is that due to the cultural assaults by the dominant faith in America, namely that of secular fundamentalism, people have been trained to equate all religions, which is really absurd when you think about it, because, you know, people don't equate all cars. You know, I like a BMW much more than I liked a Yugo or whatever it is. People are much more uncomfortable saying, well, you know, Judeo-Christian faith, biblical-based faith, well, they're better than Islam. People don't like saying things like that. You're not supposed to say things like that. And I think it's a real mistake to prevent honesty in this discussion as well. As I point out, I'm not being a bigot by simply identifying the fact that no Islamic country in the world has an illegal immigration problem.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing a change right now that, again, I haven't heard anybody comment on, but I'd like to have your views. In the mid to late 1990s, Bill Clinton, as president, had an affair with Monica Lewinsky. And the popular culture and the elites in the media and in government rose to his defense and said that character really doesn't matter. What matters is that a president is able to do his job properly. And the moral aspect was discounted. And something changed in our culture, not just about Bill Clinton, but about our attitudes toward our leaders being involved in illicit sexuality. And we're seeing it right now on a number of fronts. And I'm going to have to really come close to the limits here. But one of our candidates has been an admitted womanizer, and he has indicated even to me that he has been forgiven for that. And only God knows, and I accept that. But the attitude of the public toward that has changed. Mm-hmm. It is reflective of what happened in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. Do you see a link between those?
Oh, sure. No, and it links directly from there. I think we can all connect the dots from the political circumstances you describe going back to the 90s all the way to the contemporary period, and essentially what can be described only as media hatred for the Denver Broncos' Tim Tebow.
Yes.
And I think perhaps what bothers them more than anything else, honestly, I mean, you know, it's not his playing, and they don't have a problem with his throw. Well, the problem they really have is that here is a young man in his early 20s, good looking, with plenty money, who could literally have a different girl every night of the week and who pledges purity. Mm-hmm. Now, that drives them frantic.
Unacceptable.
Yeah.
Unacceptable.
That's right. I remember thinking about this when all the stuff with Bill Clinton came out, and I'd hear people go, well, I like him. He's just like me.
Yeah, that's right.
And
exactly.
I'd think, but I don't want a president just like me. I want a president better than me. I want a president I can look up to and I can strive to be like, and I can tell my son, this is the type of person you should be when you grow up.
No, that's exactly right. And, and you know, there's another additional problem, a cultural calamity that falls into place, because once you remove the religious restraints to rampant sexuality, and all you've got to do is relax those religious restraints, and male nature will take care of the rest and bring about the decline of a civilization. One of the mechanisms is, of course, as we've discussed, economic, because in a sense, it requires the same kind of control and self-discipline to get up every single morning and go to work, whether you like it or not, as it takes to restrain various appetites. And so when you weaken one muscle, you weaken everything else as well. And not only do we have a tendency on the part of a society that has relaxed all form of sexual restraint to also go into free fall economically, but what also happens is that such a society tends towards becoming a more feminine society in a sense. Islam, fundamentalist Islam, which is essentially a brutal and violent culture, is seducing a somewhat feminized American culture, because there's no other way to explain the love affair that America's left-wing and secularized elites have with Islam. The very people who are trying to kill them. But they're fine with them. What they really have problems with are Christians.
Yeah.
Rabbi, that really came home to me this past Sunday. Our pastor was speaking on leadership, and at the close of the service, he asked all of the men in the audience to come forward. And it was just overwhelming as a woman sitting there to see all of these men come forward. But he spoke to them, really giving them permission to stand up and be the men that they are to be in the home and in the culture. And what struck me was he then spoke to the women and he said, women, if your husband or son or father, someone is up here and they are getting up every day and going to work and providing for you and protecting you and living, as Dr. Dobson calls it, the straight life, you need to rise up and thank them and praise them, because that is going against the culture. They're not famous, but they're standing strong.
And Luann, you're 100% right. God bless your pastor. He's exactly right. If a man does all of those things and remains sexually faithful and pure, he's going against the culture and he's going against his own nature.
Mm-hmm. And he will not be praised for it in the culture. So the church needs to do that.
And I'll tell you, Luann, just as a psychologist dealing with marriage, the most common fight and conflict that men and women have is that the men are doing that job so well that they don't have a lot of extra time. Mm-hmm. They come home tired, and they're not involved romantically with their wives, who are greatly irritated that this man is working all the time. And what he's really doing is trying to live out that responsibility to protect and provide for his own family. Now, that's a very controversial point of view, and I'm not suggesting that that men be workaholics and not care about the romantic needs of their wives. In fact, I've written a book on that called What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women. But I'm telling you, there needs to be some level of appreciation spoken about that conflict to women, that if you want your man to be a man, allow him to work for you. Do you understand that?
Doctor, I appreciate that greatly. It just strikes me here we're talking about the battle for civilization, and that can be as simple as me going home tonight and just thanking my husband for the way he gets up at 5:30, 6 o'clock every day and being faithful to the role that he was called.
Laura texted me that today.
Really?
Yep.
What did she say?
I appreciate you going to work today. But it makes me feel so good that she takes part of her day to recognize that, that I do go to work and I bring home a paycheck and I help out and I, you know, do baby work and all the things that I do. But she appreciates this, and it makes me want to continue to do that.
Makes you glad to be a man.
It does. There are a lot of things that make me glad to be a man. I was there for the birth. I just thank the Lord every day. I was like, I'm glad to be a man.
Rabbi, the most important question I want to ask you is, where is Western civilization going? I mean, is this a short-term thing? Or are we destined to continue the decline because of these issues of sexuality that we've been talking about?
Well, it all depends. I'm not a prophet, so I can't tell you which way it's going to go, but I can tell you what the two alternatives are. That's clear to anybody. You know the answer as well as I do. The answer is very simple. You know, we can look back, and the way I like to put it is that a Western civilization undeniably built upon the Bible. There's no question about that. One only has to look at the history of commerce in the West, the history of science development in the West, the history of art in the West. There was always music and art. I mean, all church-based and God-centric. It's not an accident that capital market has ever emerged indigenously from a non-Christian country. It's not an accident that over 90% of all scientific and medical and technological advances came from Christian countries, Christian cultures, and in many cases from Christian men and women who were scientists. These are not accidents. Western civilization is the product of the Bible, and it works better than any other system. We devised, as part of Western culture and as part of a biblically based civilization, we see cleanliness as a virtue. And so for that reason, bathrooms in the West became the bathrooms that were adopted in Beijing and Bombay and Bangkok. We didn't copy their holes in the ground. We didn't copy their systems of sewage flowing down the main street of the town every morning. They copied us. Mm. The rest of the world has recognized that what Christianity built works best. And so our choice is to become happy warriors and to encourage every believer to lose his restraint, to replace his timidity with a sense of triumph and gratitude, and to replace his diffidence with a sense of determination, and to basically help people restore the central role of faith in American public life. Under those circumstances,
spiritual renewal.
Under those circumstances, we win. Everything comes back. The economy comes back. National security comes back. Cultural cohesiveness comes back. Everything will be fine. Or alternatively, God forbid, we fail in that. And if that's the case, then barbarism triumphs, and the fading whimper of civilization will be as barbarism utterly invades the ruins of everything that was built by the West, and they will squat in the rubble and as I say, consider it still to be superior to anything they could have ever built themselves.
That recalibration of faith and discipline rarely happened in human history, but it has happened, hasn't it?
It has happened, and for this purpose, frankly, I find the model of ancient Israel to be the most inspiring, to be the most helpful. And when I sometimes wake up in the night worried about my children, worried about the future of my country, worried about what future generations of Americans are going to confront, I take great comfort and I fall back asleep when I realize that as long as a nation is willing to bring itself back under the covenant, to once again restore its relationship with God on high, just as ancient Israel did, from the most dreadful depths and from the most gloomy and hopeless circumstances, to once again recover and rise up again. That is the model. That is what reassures us that the conventional pattern of societies subsiding and becoming decadent and then depraved and then finally utterly vanishing off the stage of world history isn't inevitable.
That also occurred in the Great Awakening, didn't it?
It sure did. And we've had what I tend to think of two Great Awakenings in the United States of America. And I think we just could be on the threshold of a third Great Awakening, and when it happens, I know that that you, Dr. Dobson, and your wife Shirley, and your family, and all those who have had the privilege of working with you over the years, will receive full credit for the role that you have played in what I pray will very soon be evident as the third Great Reawakening that'll save not only America, but all of civilization.
Well, I don't think any individuals are going to be able to make it happen. It's going to have to happen through the church and through a genuine repentance and what used to be called a revival. That's what my father called it. We don't refer to it as a revival now, but what he meant by that is a spirit of reconciliation with God and asking for forgiveness and returning to some basic principles.
That's all it's going to take.
Mm. Well, what a pleasure to talk to you. My goodness, this has been so thought-provoking. And Ryan or Lou Anne, any last thing you want to ask?
Rabbi, I just wanted to ask you, for those of us who would like to help usher in that great awakening, in a sense, we're kind of preaching to the choir here. Most individuals listening probably agree with the way Dr. Dobson and you are really laying out the Judeo-Christian heritage here. But how can we take that into our spheres of influence? When I'm sitting there at a coffee shop or someone who doesn't agree with me, how can I convey this without being accused of, you know, being over the top or proselytizing? How can we take this into the community?
Well, I think that above all, if I may say, you've got to, how do I say this without sounding, heaven forbid, offensive at all, but not, I don't want to be offensive to anybody, either Christians or Jews, so I'm going to say it anyway. I think you have to become a little more Jewish.
Describe that.
What that means is... you have to lose your embarrassment at saying who you are and what you believe. I think that the most oppressed minority in America today, and I really do believe this, I do believe the most oppressed group of people in America today are Christians who have been conditioned by the culture to be reticent about their faith and their beliefs. Almost everybody in America has come out of the closet, if you'll pardon the phrase. Almost everybody proudly proclaims their pride in whatever it is they do, except people of faith who are sort of almost embarrassed. We're timid about it. And I just think that it's easier to evangelize. I think it's easier to win people to the cause of faith if we carry ourselves like, frankly, the winners God made us to be.
Boy, that is very, very well said.
Yes.
And we're just a bunch of wimps is what you...
Well, I think I was not going to say anything like that, Dr.
I think that's what I just heard.
No, sir. Absolutely not.
Well, let me say it. We are. You know, because people are afraid of being ridiculed. They're afraid of being called in the philosophical realm that I represent, right-wing fundamentalist crazies. I mean, the media just beats us up all the time. And in 1993, when Bill Clinton became president, I sat in my office with one of my vice presidents, and I said, to this point in my life, I've tried to defend the things I believed, but keep my head down as much as possible. We used to laugh about it. We said that we would stay in the trees and come out and bomb the bridge and run back in. In 1993, I saw it disintegrating so fast that I said, I can't do that anymore. I'm going to take the hits. Here I am. Come get me. And I've paid a price for that. But I did it on purpose, intentionally. I allowed myself to be marginalized and vilified, but I don't regret a minute of it because I've stood for what I believe. And I want to say, especially to the men who are listening to us out there today, if you believe something, have the guts to stand up and defend it.
Choose for yourself this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord.
And pay the price for it if necessary.
And it's the women also, Dr. Dobson, because
we guys
are encouraged when the women are with us. I would echo your clarion call for courage among men to be extended to everybody. We need everybody.
Rabbi Daniel Lappin, I admire you more than I can say, and I always love talking to you because I see things similarly to what you are teaching and preaching. And so it's been a pleasure to have you on the program today. And please come.
Likewise, my great honor, Dr. Dobson and Ryan and Luann, please have me back. You'll never have to twist my arm. It's a delight to spend time together with you.
You can count on it. Thanks again.
Luann, that's an inspiring way to end this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. It's nice to be encouraged and know there is still hope.
Well, Ryan, as long as the gospel of Jesus Christ is being proclaimed, there will always be hope. And those of you listening today, we hope this conversation has really spurred your interest. This is a crucial topic, and we are glad you've tuned in today.
If you'd like to learn more, we'd encourage you to stop by drjamesdobson.org. There we have a link to Rabbi Lappin's books, which are no doubt filled with even more fascinating insights on the culture. Again, that is drjamesdobson.org.
Or if you would like a CD for yourself, in fact, I would highly recommend you pass this along to a friend or a family member. You can find that online or ask about it when you call. Our number is 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825.
As always, we're grateful you would spend this time with us on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, and join us again tomorrow.
We'll see you then.